swearing on for the cabinet that I'll ask the president to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
And welcome back to Business at the Ballot Box, a daily general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. I'm Patrick Haughey, and on today's episode, I will be meeting one of Ireland's most successful and experienced business leaders, Gary McGann. Gary currently chairs Flutter PLC, but he's also the chairman of a number of other large companies across a range of sectors. Gary is going to be joined by Sharon Higgins, Director of Member Services at IBEC. Between them, both guests have a very clear and very comprehensive view of the regulatory landscape in Irish business. And today, we will be asking whether the current regulation of Irish business is serving to help or hinder those businesses and society in general. I will also be meeting the heads of two global companies with hugely significant operations here in Ireland, Oliver Looms of Diageo and Tony Neary of Medtronic. If you would like to join the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn, use the hashtag BeTheVoice, and you can also email us through ibecpodcasts@ibec.ie. So let's meet today's panel.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.
And I'm delighted to be joined now by Sharon Higgins, Director of Member Services at IBEC, and also Gary McGann. And Gary, I don't know how to introduce you because you hold such a broad portfolio of chairmanships that I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself and maybe to give us a flavour of some of the chairmanships that you hold and the companies you work with.
Good morning and thanks. I chair Flutter PLC, which is in the sports betting and gaming business, it would be better known by the old name of Paddy Power. I chair Arista AG, which again is a Swiss public company, but would be previously known through the Cuisine de France and the IAWS brands. I chair Secon, which is the CISC group in the construction industry. And I chair Aon, the insurance and services business in Ireland.
So an incredibly broad sector in terms of the different sectors in the industries that you're involved with. Each, of course, experiencing and, I suppose, under their own level of regulation, their own type of regulations, as we would expect. Could you give us a very broad sense of some of the regulations that are causing concern, or maybe a better word is to say, at least causing conversations in the boardroom? Just a couple of examples to frame our conversation.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the best way to answer that, Patrick, is if we remind ourselves what I believe regulation was meant to do and achieve, and certainly in old God's time, the purpose of regulation when first introduced was where the market didn't achieve a sensible outcome for the consumers of whatever products and services we were talking about. And therefore, interventions of some shape or form were necessary, either because of monopoly. Quite often those were state monopolies, so you need some form of regulation to ensure that the behaviours got the right outcomes, or where there were safety factors, standards, etc. And the key question, I think, and I think today there is a case, in my view, for good regulation, no question or doubt about it. But I think there are two aspects to it that sometimes get conflated. One is the original purpose, which is to achieve good market outcomes as a thing from interfere inappropriately in market outcomes. And the second one is overreach. And in my life, I've been involved in regulation in the airport sector, and I was on both sides of that because I was running Aer Lingus in the early days of regulation. And the airline business, quite frankly, has a shorter term horizon than the airports business, which is long-term infrastructure. So when you get a regulator that's basically trying to maybe inappropriately strike a balance between somebody who's very short-term focused and something which is extremely long-term focused, you get bad outcomes. And for example, we had huge challenges to get Pier D and Terminal 2 built against all the noise from parties that would be well-known in this country. I'd ask you, what would happen if we hadn't built Terminal 2 and Pier D? What would it be like today? We were told it would be a white elephant. It's jammed. I came in last night. It was thriving. And we're going through exactly the same process again now at Dublin Airport, trying to plan for the next 50 years. And again, short-sightedness, and again, pricing is going to get in the way if we don't take care.
Something that Dalton Phillips of DAA spoke to us about a little earlier in the series. Gary, you've been in business a long time. You've seen a lot of changes. Would you say that business is more heavily regulated now than it was at any other time in your career?
I think it depends on where you land the question. If we talk about it from the point of view of Ireland, I think the answer is yes. And I think the answer is fairly obvious why it is the case. Because we have Irish legislation and regulation, and then we're a member of a very important club called the European Union. And so you get the danger is you get the best or the worst of both if we're not careful. But we certainly get two-tier regulation from time to time. And that's something that we need to be very mindful of, because quite frankly, being a member of Europe still doesn't change the fact that we're a small peripheral island on the west coast of Europe, which if we sneeze, we will vanish. And so our success, something that's maybe worth coming back to, but is what has made us successful and what will stop making us successful. And I maybe come back to that when you want to.
Absolutely, and I'd love to. Sharon Higgins, very welcome to the podcast. Could you maybe firstly describe the structure of IBEC and your role within it? Because I think this is quite pertinent to the discussion.
Sure. Well, IBEC is it's obviously the largest trade association in Ireland. And within that, we have an additional 36 trade associations that sit there. At a macro level, we look at all of the big issues that are there for the country, from policy to the economics to everything else. And then at a sectoral level, we look at very specific issues that are arising within those sectors. So we would represent the pharmaceutical industry, the medical devices sector, financial services, retail, food. So every type of sector out there within IBEX. We have a really good understanding of what's happening, as I say, at that macro and at the sectoral level as well.
So in terms of what's happening, what examples would spring to mind that you believe would illustrate examples of regulation and maybe the kind of regulation that is not so good for business?
Yeah, so I suppose maybe to start, I would say that Ireland we've built a really strong reputation as a country where it's good to do business in and to invest in. And part of that is because we have a strong regulatory environment. So I think it's important to say that regulations are often good. And it's important that we do have them. And it does lead to stability in terms of people making decisions around investment here, that we're seen to do the right thing. I suppose where we always have to be careful is that we do the right thing and that we really think about the implications of what we're doing across any regulation that we put into the country, either European regulation or locally here. So there's lots of things happening, you know, on a regular basis, right throughout all of the different sectors. A couple of things that maybe to point out that are quite common would be around the whole insurance area and the rates area, which are causing huge costs for business, and they're not always thought through. So I think a big thing around this is how do we enable our businesses, our industry, to be part of that conversation, to really look at doing risk assessments early on to make sure that we manage the outputs of these particular regulations when they happen and that they don't detrimentally affect anything without necessarily needing to do so. So I suppose other areas then that are quite specific, a lot of it actually going through with my colleagues, some of the things that are out there, it is all about the need for additional collaboration, for joined up government, so that when we do put these in place, that they are put in correctly. So for example, within the medical technology sector, just to pick one there, there are massive new regulations coming down from Europe, which are going to change the whole landscape for medical technologies going onto the marketplace. Unfortunately, at this point, they're coming down very quickly, and either at European level or at local level within the jurisdictions, we're not ready for that. And it means that there is potential for products not to make it to the market, for businesses to be under huge pressure, and particularly indigenous business, where they don't have the capacity to deal with these things out front. So without getting into the technical details, that's a very big example, I suppose, of something that's going to hit everybody, every person in the country. And we as IBEC and with our trade associations are lobbying very strongly in Europe and here locally with our competent authorities in Ireland to ensure that in as much as possible we can mitigate those, we can put in place the proper actions to stop them having very negative impacts. And to call out, we have had actually very good engagement with the local, with Simon Harris, for example, has been very pro supporting this at a European level. So again, a lot, that collaboration, the risk assessment, the understanding is all very important.
So maybe it comes back to that idea that we've spoken about many times in the series of social dialogue, getting the key stakeholders around the table to have those conversations. Gary, is that currently not happening? And if not, why not?
The short answer, I think, is no, and certainly not to the extent that we would need it. I mean, I do think it's worth framing this conversation in the context of what has got us to the level of success we've had today. I was actually president in IBEC when the last national pay agreement that under the old social partnership kicked in. And instead of actually modifying something that had proven very successful for the social partners, albeit had lost, it kind of went into mission creep and almost lost its way, we abolished the whole thing. Now, there were very good reasons for it. We headed into a massive downturn, and quite frankly, the rules of the game changed dramatically. But if you look at a life from an Irelandic perspective, as I said, it's a small island on the west coast of Europe. It has no oil, it has no gas, we're talking about. So its only natural resources are people. And so the only thing we have that is marketable is people. But of course, the origins of business in Ireland was agricultural, state-run, semi-state, and eventually private enterprise got the confidence to do things that the government had, of the time, had the courage to set up in advance, so all the semi-states. But we didn't morph into the private sector in a sufficient way. Net-net, the one thing that worked superbly well, and I was actually auditing them when they were started, for Chornta, Forest Chonskill, then IDA, and so on, was we mobilised our resources, which was very imaginative tax structures, very imaginative grant structures, but most importantly, education. And the combination of the three created a resource that people wanted. And then the second part was dependable, as Sharon has said, dependable government regulation, dependable conditions in which to do business. And today, if I might just segue for a moment, we are facing, I think, one of the most critical challenges to that model, with certain policies being propagated in this election that would absolutely destroy the fabric of business in this country. And it's very easy to talk about distributing the wealth, and nobody would argue it's been done well. I mean, there's no question populism is because there are genuine issues for people on trolleys, people who can't get housing, people who can't get creche at places, and so on. But to assume that the income stream that is already there will continue if business and people are taxed through the hilt is absolute fallacy. This is a mobile world. Mobile services, mobile companies, and most importantly, mobile people, our own people, will be gone in a heartbeat if we make it anti-business.
Sharon?
Couldn't agree more. I think that's the most important thing. We're very agile. We're a very open economy. We depend on our reputation. We depend on our ability to change quickly, to do the right thing, and to do the right thing for business and for society. And I think, you know, even at the core of what we do in IBEC, it's probably, you know, our purpose is to ensure that we have a sustainable future for everybody in the country. And we always take that approach to when we're looking at any piece of regulation, that we take a long-term view. And I think it's important that as a government, as a state going forward, post the elections, that we're very clear on that. This can't be short-term politics. We've got to look to the long-term view and to make sure that what we've done really well can continue into the future. And to really mind that, it's very, very important, and regularly complimented on.
Who is driving, this may be an oversimplistic question, who is driving this new type, let's say, new type of regulation? Where is it coming from, and who's it coming from?
Well, I think, I mean, at the end of the day, there are many people we would both know in politics who are very pragmatic people. Politicians have to be elected to actually do their job. And so at the end of the day, we are challenged by virtue of the fact that politics is a short-term run. We don't have any system, for example, where brave ministers would actually get security of tenure for 10 years instead of 5 or 4. So, but that's what we're stuck with. That's democracy. I think it comes back to some extent to your earlier point about some form of social pact where all of the need, I mean, business needs society to work. The perception is that business is is indifferent to society or indifferent to societal factors. Business can't thrive where there's civil unrest, where there's fragmented government, where there's the short-term policies, where there's a lack of clarity in what you can depend on, because business decisions are 5, 10, 15, 20 years hence. And so to make them, they need strong confidence that the environment in which they make them will work. And right now, the real lack of confidence is that there's a very large part of the working society in this country that are not doing well. And it's not that the money isn't being spent, it's just not landing right. We have issues around climate change, and yet we have planners who won't let the buildings go high in the city. We can't afford the rents. People have to go out of the city miles to actually buy affordable housing. They have children, they can't find creches for them. They spend 4 hours on the road or 3 hours on the road every day. That's not working. It's not working for anyone. So business has a huge interest in that working. But business has to generate the income and the taxes to be able to pay for it in the first instance. Mm. And the second part is actually the proper distribution. One last point. It's a long time since I was running semi-state businesses, but the factors and the blockages to stop the level of change we needed to get these services efficiently run, because the money that's been spent on them is at least as competitive as anywhere else, those changes are still not happening because of blockages and arrangements that are absolutely historical and not fit for purpose today.
Sharon, are we talking about that we will get to a point where business is trusted to run itself and regulate itself a little more? Is that what we're talking about?
And we certainly have really good examples where that has happened. I think there's always a balance, you know, so there are times when regulation is good and important to be seen in that way, and other times where you can do where you can self-regulate. So there's been a number of instances where industry has done that. For example, food reformulation, the sectors, the industries here in Ireland have very much taken an approach to that they want to respond to the needs of the consumers and the call-outs from the consumers around sugar, around fat, around various areas like that. So it's been a lot of work done on food reformulation, for example, to meet those areas. Other areas, maybe, for example, there would be clothing guidelines for children. So again, a lot of the retailers have come together and put together guidelines which they responsibly work towards. Another would be drinkware. Again, that was brought together as a way of kind of making sure that we deal with the negative impacts of alcohol, but at the same time, you know, address them, in a way that wasn't forced upon them. Now things are changing at the moment, but that maybe is another example around where companies see the need for having self-regulation. They come together, they define what that might be, and then they go and they engage with government and other regulators and they self-regulate around that. There would be other areas, say, around the pharmaceutical and the medical technology sector again, where engagement with clinicians and other areas like that was seen to be an area where needed to be self-regulated. So again, a lot of companies have done a lot more around that at a European, at a global level as well. So yeah, there's lots going on all over the individual sectors, looking to see how they can do things better, recognising the needs and responding an awful lot to consumer demand, to be honest. So.
That's ultimately what it comes down to, because if you do not have fair pricing models, if you don't have good products, if you don't have safe products, you are not going to stay in the market very long.
No, I think you're right, Patrick. I mean, there is a perception that business is against regulation. I think business's view is self-regulation is the ideal model if it works ultimately for the consumers, because for business it doesn't work if it doesn't work for the consumers. But I'm in a sector where we're actually looking for regulation. We're supportive of it, and the government are supportive of it, but we still haven't, and that is the Gambling Act. We have no gambling bill that is fit for purpose. And Flutter is absolutely on the record year after year saying we really do need good regulation and a regulation that addresses the type of issues that people are concerned about, and they're justifiably concerned about. Because evidence-based regulation, as distinct from negative sentiment-based regulation, is what really helps things work. Work for everybody, work for companies, work for consumers, work for society at large. But I think the second aspect of regulation, for example, if you think about it from financial services, Sharon, you'd be familiar with this, but certainly in the Aon world and other worlds I'm involved in, we have to have efficient regulation. I mean, the pace of business nowadays is dramatically faster. And the changes in products and the changes in service demands and the evolution of innovation and so on is dramatically faster. We can't have a regulatory environment where people don't know when they're going to get an answer, or it is protracted beyond belief such that people just go elsewhere. And we do have, and nobody wants to get back to any perception whatsoever of light touch. I'm not talking about light touch regulation, far from it. I'm talking about efficient processes within the regulatory process.
And that brings up that idea of who is overseeing the regulation, and are there enough of them?
So maybe just to jump in there, there's I think just maybe to call out on the financial services area there a moment ago, there's been, you know, an awful lot going on in this area. There's been a lot of talk around how we can engage better, and ultimately the central bank, you know, would be great if that would engage more with the industry. So there's lots of different things there that we can do better. Who needs to do this? Have we got resources? I would say in some cases the resources are there, but often they're not there in sufficient quantity with the right type of detail. Maybe again to give a very quick example, a very, you know, small example, but it's very real, where in the drinks sector, there's a lot of work being done in Ireland at the moment around geographical indicators, which basically is where the product is from. So you can think of poutine, Irish cream liqueur, you know, various Irish products like that. Now, there are four competent authorities that are working across this area, and that makes it very difficult for the industry to move forward. So that's an example where there's multiple agencies with multiple areas of responsibility, and it can be, again, quite difficult to get the indicators up and running. And within that as well, there are resources issues. So I've heard some examples where the industry wanted to do some very small things because of the type of thing they wanted to do was really around just basically putting together a labelling guideline, and the resources weren't available in the department, so it couldn't happen. Now, the industry would easily have paid for it. It's nothing that would have been difficult to do, but the resources weren't there. So there's a couple of different things there all the time. So again, multiple agencies involved. What's your locus model there? How does that work? And then also then, you know, are the resources available internally? So I think all of that needs to be constantly looked at as part of an impact assessment model.
I think Sharon makes an exceptionally good point. One of the things that I've detected over the years is this almost belief that you can't kind of dance with the enemy. There's this mindset that regulators are meant to keep business in check, and they can't really engage with them. They have to be detached, they have to be independent. And in principle, that's correct. But I come back to it. This is a small island economy on the west coast of Europe. We need to do things better than anybody else. We need to be more efficient than anybody else. You ask who kind of holds regulation to account. I think there are a couple of steps. I think one, when regulation is set up, it really does need that all parties have engaged such that, on balance, it's seen to be starting as good regulation. But it starts and continues exactly the way it started, as if life was static. Mm. So there's no checkpoint during the regulatory process to say, is this shape still fit for purpose? The second thing we know for a fact in Ireland, the OECD have called out many times, regulation impact is not properly done in a rigorous way in Ireland at the beginning, or indeed during the process. And if it did, we'd avoid some of the laws of unintended consequences. I have no doubt, for example, that nobody in Ireland with a brain in their head would suggest that we shouldn't prepare for success and be ahead of the curve with infrastructure. And yet, the airport is fighting like crazy to try and expand to accommodate the obvious growth that we're attracting because of our success. We built airports all over the country instead of roads and sort of rail systems. So here's a small island with seven airports. Six of them, five of them, were never going to be viable. So the whole issue of regulation initiation and regulation review. And back to the gambling one, to the credit of Minister David Staunton, he has engaged extensively with the industry, and we're headed for hopefully good regulation. Unfortunately, again, with the fragmented government we have, the enactment of bills and legislation is very, very short supply. And if we end up with fragmented government going forward, that's what we can expect.
Sharon, you mentioned a few minutes ago the drink sector. Perfect opportunity for me to introduce a short interview I did with Oliver Looms of Diageo Ireland recently, where he does touch on this area of regulation, and he also has some very, very clear messages and asks for the next government.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Hi, my name is Oliver Looms. I'm the, or Ollie Looms. I'm the country director of Diageo in Ireland. And I'm also the chair of Drinks Ireland within IBEC. Diageo as a company is obviously, you know, the world's number one premium drinks business. But in Ireland, we've got a very big footprint as well. We obviously have the domestic business, where we've got many well-known drinks brands and spirits brands, Guinness, Smithwick's, Rockshore and Hop House 13 and Smirnoff and Bailey's, etc. So we've got a domestic business that's quite significant. We also have a very big manufacturing footprint in Ireland. Guinness, which is brewed at St. James's Gate, and also a packaging plant in Belfast, and Bailey's, which has a manufacturing footprint both in the south and in the north as well. And then we've also got Ireland's number one tourist attraction in the Guinness Storehouse, highly successful. Almost 2 million people going through the doors of the Guinness Storehouse from all over the world every year. And most recently, we've added to that with the Roe & Co. Irish whiskey brand, a new Irish whiskey brand. And we've also opened that distillery, which is at St. James's Gate, open to the public as well. So very dynamic, innovative and significant business in Ireland.
From your position within Diageo and also IBEC, what do you hope that the next government will deliver and will prioritise?
Yeah, well, I suppose let me just start by saying Ireland does have a rich heritage of brewing and distilling in Ireland. We're home, as I said already, to some of the most iconic brands like Guinness, like Bailey's. And we do have a very big and positive impact on the domestic economy in terms of employment and domestic purchases and exports and so on. And also a big impact on the global stage. But I think we also see that we've got further opportunity to grow, and therefore we do have some asks of the government. There's three or four things that we would call out as priorities and asks from the industry for the next government. And to name them, I'd say, first of all, it's really important that that the industry has a stable and effective environment internationally and globally to continue with that business growth. As I said, we shipped and exported almost €1.5 billion worth of products from this industry around the world to 140 countries. So having an effective environment for global growth is really key. Obviously, we've got the uncertainty of Brexit that we're dealing with at the moment. Even locally, the you know, ensuring that we've got frictionless trade between North and South is going to be key. And then latterly, we've now got kind of protectionism showing its face on the global stage. And that's impacting on us as well with the 25% tariff on cream liqueurs, brands like Bailey's into the US. And so we would ask the government to support our international and our global ambitions by working to ensure that we don't have protectionism in global trade, and that we've got a smooth, frictionless environment for trade. So that's the first ask. The second ask I'd call out, I suppose, is around the area of excise tax. We're a big employer of people directly and indirectly in Ireland. 90,000 people employed directly in the industry, a further 175,000 employed indirectly. And unfortunately, despite that, we have one of the highest excise rates on alcohol in the EU, the second highest excise rate. So our ask is to bring Ireland's alcohol excise rate in line with the rest of Europe. Stop penalising Irish business and Irish consumers in what is a great industry, but by bringing us in line with the rest of Europe. So that's the second ask. The third I would call out is as important to the alcohol industry as it is to the rest of industry, which is the environment and climate and sustainability. And we really want a government that's supporting the sustainability and climate agenda. And again, particularly to this industry, ensuring that our farmers are supported to produce low carbon and high quality ingredients for the sector. We do make, as an industry, a major contribution, just thinking about agriculture, to the economy. We buy 300 million litres of milk. That's more than 5% of our total milk production. We buy 220,000 tonnes of barley and malt barley every year. So that's, you know, that's very positive, and we want to make sure that we've got an environment that's positive and that sustains that for the future. And then fourthly and lastly, our last ask, I suppose, would be around the area of how we as a society engage with alcohol in a responsible way and deal with misuse where it exists. I would like to say, firstly, that we're making progress, I think, as a society. Alcohol consumption, interestingly, is down 23% since 2001, which is a very significant reduction. And in fairness, we would have been quite high on the league table of alcohol consumption. We're now coming down more in the middle of the table, which is great. Good progress. Although we all know there is misuse and irresponsible consumption of alcohol. And we would like to partner with the government in dealing with that. We want to work together. We don't think a kind of a unilateral way of dealing with this from the government down on the rest of us is the best way. Actually, you need multiple stakeholders. You need You need parents and education and health and industry and the government, of course. And legislation can play a role, but we'd like to be very much central to that.
Do you feel up to now that Diageo has been listened to when it comes to measures around misuse of alcohol?
Well, listen, we've been very involved in kind of self-regulating in the alcohol industry in advertising terms, for example, over the last few years, and done a fantastic job in that. And we are in conversation with the government and so on in terms of the future. But I think there's more that can be done. Right now, we've moved from a public health alcohol bill to an alcohol act that's going to put further restrictions on various different labels like cancer warnings and health warnings, etc. And we just think that there's more that we can do. We're already doing it on a voluntary basis within the sector. The Guinness brand, for example, Smittick's brand, has voluntarily put information on all its labels in relation to alcohol content and health warnings in terms of pregnancy, etc. So we're doing quite a lot as an industry already, and therefore I think we've shown our credentials in terms of being a willing and able party to be part of that long-term solution.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Oliver Looms of Diageo Ireland there. I'm still joined by Gary McCann, Chairman at Flutter, and Sharon Higgins, Director of Member Services at IBEC. And Sharon, I wanted to, before we wrap up, I wanted to talk to you about one more thing, and that's the relationship between regulation and competitiveness.
So it's so important that we get the right regulation, that we get right support from government around all of these to ensure that we remain competitive. Maybe just to pick up on a couple of short things there before we close. And first is 5G. So there has been misinformation out there, and there are some county councils around the country who are getting data and information around 5G, which is making them nervous. Anything we've seen, anything we've done, all of the information out there says that 5G is perfectly safe. And we need the government to get behind that, to provide the supports to ensure that we have the right infrastructure in place, and that companies all around the country, and indeed individuals and households around the country, have access to the top technology that they need to live and do business in Ireland. The other areas, I suppose, just to maybe point out, would be around insurance. So I mentioned that a little bit earlier on. It's such a big area for us that we can be competitive. We have to have the right regulation in the country. We also have to have the right model of engagement with government around that. So there are specific things that we'd like government to do at the moment, in particular to implement the cost of insurance working group reports around insurance, and also to set up a working group on rates as well, because rates are a massive issue, and there are lots of things happening around the country that are driving costs for business in an inequitable and uncompetitive manner. So just wanted to maybe close with those.
Yeah, just one point on that. Have we seen examples recently where our current regulatory structures have discouraged inward investment into the country?
Well, I'm not sure discouraged yet, but quite frankly, if you can't get into the country in any sort of reasonable way through the airport on the one hand, and through into the city on the other hand, and secondly, if there isn't an infrastructure when you do get into the country to be able to stay in the country and live in the country, then the answer is indirectly yes. So, for example, we cannot get workers, sufficient construction workers in Ireland, to construct housing and residential, because we haven't got the housing for them. Mm-hmm. So it's potentially a vicious circle. So I think there's no question that there's a fundamental rethink now. We are, to be fair, to put this into some balance, we are living with the consequences of success, not the consequences of failure. But we're not managing. I mean, I argued back in the collapse, which everybody suffered from, and certainly some of us were more guilty than others. But we used to be, as a country, we were well used to managing in adversity. I mean, our history tells us that that's something we've practiced for centuries. So when we had success, we actually didn't manage it very well. Second time round, we should be better. And quite frankly, this is the opportunity. If I had one ask of government, and it's very difficult, whatever hue of government or shade of government we get, at the end of the day, it's a very challenging career path. And the best chance, in my view, government and people in government have, is to be courageous and do the right thing. Get the information, make the decisions, consult widely. Let's get a social pact that allows for that. But instead of trying to satisfy all the people all of the time, be decisive. And what has got us to where we are today is people like Lamass and Whitaker and Pádraig Ó HÉigín and Paddy Keane and people, civil servants like that, who actually supported the politicians to do the right things at the right time. And we really have to change how we manage the public sector. We have to fix the hospital system. It's not that it needs more money. Throwing more money at a bad problem will not fix it. We have to get more housing into the marketplace. There are loads of people like Sisks trying to build houses if they could get access to land to build it. We don't want to be developers. We're builders. And then thirdly, if we don't, the policies that say cap fees and say nothing else about education, where we know that we're sliding right down the league tables in international universities, where people come to the university because it's high quality and because with that university's name they will get great jobs, we're losing that battle rapidly. And there's a regulated sector where effectively the people who are running it are regulated as to what they can do, how they can employ, how much they can charge, and yet they're expected to be successful. That's not a great model.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
And that was Gary McGann, chairman of Flutter PLC and also chair of a number of other large companies across a broad range of sectors. And he was joined by Sharon Higgins, director of member services at IBEC. And during that discussion, Sharon mentioned the medtech sector in Ireland. And of course, one of the largest companies in that sector is Medtronic, an employer of around 4,000 people in Galway. I recently caught up with Tony Neary, who's the vice president of Medtronic in Ireland, to talk about Galway, medtech in Ireland and talent.
So Medtronic is the largest medical device company in the world. You know, our most important stat is every second we serve two patients around the world, based in, you know, 180 locations around the world. Very global company and a very large presence in Ireland. We've been here in Ireland since 1981. What we develop and work on is groundbreaking new technologies. I don't know what we'll be working on in 5 years' time. All that is driven by our people and talent. So that's the key to our success, to make sure we recruit and develop the best talent, and that's ultimately how you succeed.
Is it fair to say Ireland would be quite a global hub for medtech?
Ireland is one of the key, I think it's in the top five global hubs for medtech, and that's most, it's pretty diverse across the country as well, our regional based. Galway's certainly been, obviously I'm a little biased here, but Galway's certainly the hub of medtech in Ireland.
Is there more that could be achieved in the region, in the city, based on different types of supports and action from the next government?
So that leads well into where our challenges are in Galway, and I think a lot of the challenges are based around infrastructure and the need for infrastructure and critical infrastructure to allow industry and indeed the whole city and region to prosper. Industry succeeds, and you know, particularly the medtech industry succeeds by being ambitious, by creating the future, by not settling for second best. And you know, that would be my hope for our politicians and next government, that we have ambition, that we look at critical infrastructure and gear ourselves up to succeed, play to win rather than play not to lose.
Yeah, and I guess also the industry you're in, it involves a lot of research and development, a lot of investment into things that may not necessarily turn into profit margin. So are there supports around that as well that we could be seeing more of?
Yeah, the current research and development funding model is good, but it's something that we need to protect, because ultimately, you know, Ireland has its advantages, but we need to continue to always be at the cutting edge. And that is why our R&D capability is crucial in the medtech, but I would also say across most industries, that we lead the forefront rather than follow.
Tony Neary there, Vice President of Medtronic in Ireland. And that is it for today's episode of Business at the Ballot Box. Don't miss the next episode, where we look at the dramatic changes to the world of work in recent years, largely driven by technology, and how business and workers can best adapt to those changes. I hope you can tune in for that, and we'll see you next time.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.